What is up, everyone, and welcome back to the Triple H podcast. Happy Hour Hoops. It is just me and Jake today, and you guys know that Happy Hour Hoops is presented by, brought to you by WinStreaks. It's the best sports app out there, guys. It's simple. You pick teams to win games, accumulate points off those picks, and then you win cash prizes weekly. WinStreaks is 100% free to play. You can make up to 5 picks per day on the NBA, NFL when it's back, NHL, MLB is right around the corner. College basketball is in the thick of things right now. 100 players win cash prizes every week up to $2,000. The contest runs from Monday to Sunday. Again, there is no deposits ever, guys. You just make your picks, accumulate those points, and then you win cash prizes. And never forget to use our code HHH in the referral code section when you sign up. Use our code HHH. Not only does that help us if you love Happy Hour Hoops, but if we do another game, if we do another giveaway down the road, that referral code will enter you into the Happy Hour Hoops giveaway group. So go ahead and do that. Use our code HHH when you sign up for the WinStreaks app. My favorite sports app out there. I'm constantly making my NBA picks on the WinStreaks app, trying to accumulate those points, trying to be the best player on the WinStreaks app every week. If you're competitive, if you love sports, go get the WinStreaks app. Jake, we're just going to have to get into it right now off the top. The Cavs last week beat up on Steve's Mavs. They took down Luka and company in a Max Strus game-winning 62-foot thriller. The Cavs without Donovan Mitchell last night. I emphasize that. Without Donovan Mitchell last night, without Max Strus, the guy who hit the game-winner against the Mavs last night, down by 20 in the fourth quarter against my Boston Celtics, and they came back and they won the game by a single point. You have the floor, Jake. We're going to do this. If we have Happy Hour Hoops matchups, winner gets the floor. So let's hear about those Cavs.
For 2 weeks in a row, I was like, well, I'm just going to have to sit and like more. Yesterday was more the whole day leading up to and during the game up until the fourth quarter. Last week it was, you know, a back and forth affair. And then I saw the ending until the Strus shot. Obviously, like 3 seconds in between, there was like, oh man, that split second's like, Steve's just gonna roast me. He's gonna be hyped up. Thankfully, Steve needed a break this week because Steve's texts have been very sad and depressing about the Mavs for good reason the last couple weeks. I think he needed a basketball breather. I was in shock. Really, I want to give credit to the Cavs. It's the Dean Wade game. He went for 20 points in the fourth quarter. It was insane to see. They end up pulling out a 1-point win. Dunny, we can talk about what you have seen. I know that there's been rumblings on Celtics Twitter all day about the call at the end and everything else. Mm-hmm. So I want to get into that a little bit and just the play call at the end too. But it more felt like the Celtics just gave that one away than the Cavs are going to play hard. If there's one thing the Cleveland Cavaliers are going to do under JB Bickerstaff is play hard in every single game. They might be a soft team, as you saw. You know, we saw that Sunday night. They looked kind of soft against the Knicks. We saw it a couple weeks ago against the Bulls. Or after that Mavs win, they looked, you know, Andre Drummond just bullying Jared Allen. But they will fight hard and compete in these mm-hmm. games. And if you give them an inch, they will take that inch and keep going. And that's what it looked like in that fourth quarter. Like the Celtics, it was more like the Celtics of last year in the last couple years, where they've cruised out to these big leads. And this year, this is a team like you sent the stat last week. 3 wins of over 50 points, like the only time in NBA history. This is a team that's been finishing teams off and then going and chilling off. They were up by 21 or 18, whatever it was, and they just didn't do that against the Cavs. Maybe it was the Kelsey energy on the sidelines. They couldn't let the boys down. I don't know what it was. It shouldn't have happened, though. It shouldn't have happened from Dean Wade. It shouldn't have happened from this Cavs team. I said before the game, the only way the Cavs win this game is Darius Garland plays like an all-star. He did not. He did not play like an all-star at all. He was actually pretty bad shooting the ball yet again. It was everybody else on this Cavs team, which is, I guess, the thing I should be most encouraged about is that this Cavs depth is still pretty solid.
Okoro looked great last night, bro. That's a guy who looked awesome last night. I know you mentioned it a couple weeks ago that he's been shooting the ball better. I got to see it up close and personal last night. He really impressed me last night. From the last time I had seen Okoro play to last night, I was like, this is the same guy.
Yeah, I was going to say, think of all the shit that I and we have talked about Isaac Okoro in the past couple of years. Yeah, he's a completely different guy. Now, for the playoffs, how does that bode well? Like, for a team, when I'm as a proponent of you got to shorten the bench and you got to use, you know, a shorter bench and everything, I don't know what Dean Wade's playoff minutes are going to look like, you know, those types of things. Obviously, we touched on it before we got on here. Evan Mobley's out for an extended amount of time. That could be a blessing in disguise for this Cavs team, though. Mobley has not been finishing games lately. He hasn't been playing in clutch moments a lot of times, coming in for defensive substitutions. And anybody who's listened to this podcast has known that I've had issues with the Allen Mobley pairing for quite a while now. So maybe I'm not going to come out here and say like Evan Mobley is the problem. I don't think he is the problem, but I do think that the roster construction is a problem. And this is a team fighting for the 2 seed. Maybe they're better off with him being hurt right now, having Jared Allen, Donovan Mitchell, who were the guys those were the two who carried them to their run to second place anyways, winning 16 out of 17. Garland can kind of slide into that third scorer, other decision maker outside of Don role and see what the spacing's like. And if Mobley comes back and this team is firing at all cylinders, you know, I don't think he's ever not going to start, but maybe Mobley, he doesn't play those crunch minutes. Maybe he gets less time and you give more opportunity to shooters around Allen and everything. And that's how this team is more effective in the playoffs. It's not what you want from Evan Mobley, but it might be what is best for this team. But just from last night, it really felt like more the Celtics giving that fourth quarter away than the Cavs going and taking it from them.
Yeah.
And I do want to ask how you felt about the whole last sequence. Tatum's coming up the floor, 19 seconds left on the clock. They're down by one. What would you have done in that situation? Would you have changed anything? Like, were you fine to live with the result, or what would you have done differently?
I mean, I guess this is maybe a hindsight thing and might sound stupid. I was fine with it at first because Joe Maz likes to do that. Like Mazzulla, that's kind of his thing. Like even when, you know, another team goes on a 10-0 run and the Celtics are, you can kind of see them like losing their energy on the court. Mazzulla will kind of challenge the guys by not calling a timeout and let them work their way back into it, which I like. You know, maybe he's sticking to his styles. He's sticking to his guns. That's something he usually does. He was riding with it. You know, I respect that as far as philosophy goes, but I think that that moment in the game, you have two timeouts, the score separated by 1 point, so you're not really thinking overtime there. So the timeout thing shouldn't matter at that point, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah. I think you just have to burn one there. I think you have to advance the ball regardless. And after the game, Mazzulla claimed, and you could see him on the TV. I don't think he was lying. He was trying to call a timeout at like 4 seconds. But I think that's too little too late. Like at that point, Tatum had already tried to advance his drive twice. It didn't work. Then that's when he got into the position where Garland had him one-on-one. He bumped him a few times. He did the turnaround jumper. We thought he got fouled. He didn't. You know, whatever. I think the ref, if you want to complain about the call, if you're a Celtics fan, or the time left on the clock should have been different if you're a Celtics fan. None of that matters, man. They shouldn't have been in that predicament. They were up 20 in the fourth quarter. I thought there were good things throughout that game. Like, I think it was impressive that the Cavs seemed to be hanging around a little bit too much in the first half. And then the second half, before the last, 4 or 5 minutes there, it kind of looked good. You're like, okay, they got this lead up to 20. Here we go, 12 straight wins, and let's pack this thing up and go home. That just wasn't the case. There really isn't another way to put it other than they fell asleep. They had no respect for Dean Wade. You guys want to talk about, the threes, they just never got a hand in his face. He was the hottest guy in the gym. They just kept letting him shoot. And then all you had to do is get a rebound on the last possession after Porzingis got that and one. And Dean Wade comes in like a superhero with a cape on and gets a putback dunk.
Yep.
It's like, this is the only guy who's been killing you the whole fourth quarter. No one puts a body on him. He gets a putback dunk. I love it for Dean Wade, man. Like, shout out Dean Wade. He had a fucking hell of a game.
Dean Wade, Chiefs fan, too. That's what really came out for him.
I didn't need that. No, but it's encouraging win for the Cavs, and it's an ugly loss for the Celtics. I do think, it reminds me of a lot of teams these past few years of the Celtics. I think Bill Simmons said something about like it reminded him of the 2018 Celtics, the 2020 Celtics, the 2022 Celtics. Yep. Like it had a little bit of all of those teams, which is, you know, kind of gross to think about. You hope that they're different this year. And I think they are, but I mean, I don't know. It's kind of lazy to just chalk it up as one of those losses because of how good they've been lately. But I think it is just kind of one of those losses. I don't, you know, Brown immediately in the post-game presser was taking full responsibility, like saying this can't happen. So I think the guys are saying the right things. I think Mazzulla would like to get that possession back. I just think you have to call a timeout. But, you know, kind of all of these things put together, like they should never have been in that position. You should have had respect for Dean Wade and got a hand out there. The fourth time he put up a three in the fourth quarter, you should have boxed him out and you could have won the game, even if it's scary that they got close. I'm, you know, as far as Tatum shooting the shot and his end of game shot numbers this year that, you know, the media likes to throw around today, like that shit doesn't bother me, bro. We have so many guys that can close the game if we need to. And even all that said, if Tatum's having a poor time shooting the ball at end of games this year, I'd still rather him over 95% of the rest of the league taking those shots at the end of the game. So I think there's a lot of unneeded, unwanted chatter going around about this game. But I think at the same time, it is a little bit concerning. I mean, I've never seen a team look so different from the Warriors game on Sunday to this Cavs game on Tuesday. Like, they were untouchable on Sunday. And I think you need to – this is – I texted our mutual friend, Brett. Shout out, Brett. Big Celtics fan, just like me. I texted him and said, we need to beat Denver Thursday now or it's a bad look. Because I think you beat Denver Thursday. Doesn't matter by how much. I think if you go into Denver, beat them on Thursday, you can throw this away. I think if you lose two in a row and this being the first one, I think then the Celtics are, you know, I don't know necessarily like playoff trouble or like end of the season. They're actually in trouble and they should be worried. No, they're going to close out the year as the one seed, as like they've done all year. They're going to stay. They're going to hold that spot. But as far as the murmurs and is this team for real, that shit's all going to start to come back if they lose two in a row. And the Cavs was the first game of that too.
Yeah.
They need to play like that Warriors game on Thursday night. They need to have that fuck you attitude. They need to have that style. They didn't have it, certainly in that fourth quarter to close the game against the Cavs. I don't know. There's a lot there. It's concerning in some ways. It's also like, let's appreciate the 11-game win streak they had before that. Let's tip our hats to your Cavaliers because they did play a good game.
Well, the thing about the Cavs in this notion is that the Cavs – the last couple years have played the Celtics really well. There's been some classic games between the Celtics and Cavs, and they played the Bucks really well. There's been classic games. They've had the Bucks numbers. So as looking at it from that, you're exactly right about the Warriors. I wasn't even thinking about the Warriors game, like how much of a flip it is. And that maybe that's what comes into it too, is that team is just feeling so on top of the world after that Warriors game flying through. And I was surprised they were only up by, I think it was 11 at halftime or 13 at halftime. Felt like it should have been more at halftime, even that point. And I was like, like Cavs are going to hang around. I was texting my friends like, just hoping for this Cavs cover. Cause that's really all. I was like, you know, the Cavs can keep this 8.5. Like they can keep this game respectable all game. Was not expecting what happened though. And it did feel like it was a lackadaisical effort at the end, a team that thought they could just turn it on. The Dean Wade, you're right. Dean Wade, there was no hands in Dean Wade's face at all, but
no.
it was nuts to see. But from the Cavs side, that's what encourages me. If we're looking big picture for the Celtics, this game doesn't change anything for me. I think it's a concerning sign of what we've seen from the past from them. But I think we've seen enough this year to think that it's just a blip more than it's like what they're going to be going forward into the playoffs. For the Cavs, it just shows how matchup dependent they are going to be going into the playoffs, because they're a team that is built to grind teams out and bully teams and have one of their shooters get hot to support their stars. And the stars weren't playing great yesterday. Like, as I said, Garland wasn't shooting well. He wasn't the all-star performance. They obviously didn't have Donovan Mitchell. But
I will say, I don't know if you noticed this on Garland. I meant to say this the first time you brought him up. But so I think two episodes ago you were talking about like, okay, we're giving him this leash coming back from the injury where he, you know, obviously the jaw thing was like a huge thing. He has to play himself back into shape. Last night, he didn't shoot the ball well, but there was some signs where it was like, this this kind of seems like the old Garland, and it's specifically the threes and the timely threes that he's making. Mm-hmm. So overall, he didn't shoot the ball that well, but some of the degree of difficulty on the threes that he was hitting and like the points of the game where I was like, because that's why the Cavs wouldn't go away in the first half, because the Celtics would be like, they'd get to like 9, 10, yep. 11 points, and then Garland would hit this crazy like falling away three. And I think he only had like 12 points at the half or something, maybe even less than that. But it seems like the first half he hit a few big ones, and then even in the second half he hit like these weird threes that allowed them to stay around. But I don't think he shot particularly well, but I think it's starting to come back a little bit for Garland.
Yeah, and I didn't expect him to shoot well against Derek White and Jrue Holiday either. So like it's a really tough matchup for him being the only, you know, without Donovan in that game. It's a really tough matchup. They were putting a lot of attention on him, and he did come through with a couple times. And he had like 12 assists or 11 assists or something he ended up with too. So he was facilitating like you would want him to as well. It is encouraging from the Garland side. I'm not worried about the Celtics at all. I do think Thursday was going to be huge no matter what, right? And I went into the group. You were flying high on Sunday, as you should have been. You and Steve were flying high. And I was like, the only team I'm thinking about is this Nuggets team. And now here we are. We get it Thursday night to see. Like, it's without Jamal Murray. So that's a little, I don't know. Don't think he's supposed to play. But still with Jokic in Denver. It's a tough. Yeah, no, Murray's back. That's right. He played last night.
I was going to say, he played the other night, yeah.
I was fast.
Both coming off a loss too.
Yeah.
Nuggets lost last night.
Even that Central time, those 9:30 starts, they get you, man. They sneak up on you. It's
10 o'clock tomorrow night. It's going to be brutal, bro. we got Nuggets Celtics at 10 PM. I might take a nap in the middle of the day and then watch it.
One thing is you should have just given JBC the ball. That's really all I should have done. Give it to him. I'm with you on the end of game to bring this back full circle. The first thing I asked you about the Celtics is I know Mazzulla loves to play it out. It's been one of the things of his, and I that's how I would go with it too. Like if I was a coach, I would let it play out more often than not. But it just felt like with 19 seconds, if you don't need to go for the last shot, that's the only thing. Like, let it play out, but you got to shoot you got to shoot with like 10 seconds left.
Right.
Because even if they get a board, you can foul and then you still have another chance. And you are also one of the best defensive teams in the league. Like, if you make the shot and have to defend for 8 seconds against the Cavs without Donovan Mitchell, you should be able to do that. So it's more, and that's probably on Tatum more than it is anybody else. You got to go go get to your shot earlier. That shot shouldn't go up with 4 seconds left. It should go up with like 11 or 10 seconds left. Give your guys a chance to get an offensive board or give your guys a chance to foul. You have the timeouts, like you mentioned. If you miss it, you foul right away. They hit both their free throws. You have a chance to make a three and tie that game and go to overtime. So I think it was the decision making. The shot selection is another thing too. You can talk about if it's a foul or not. I thought he pushed at the right when I saw it. Didn't think they'd actually change it though, because you don't see that call changed a lot. But it is what it is. I would have understood if they gave the foul to Garland in that point and been, you know, fine with it. But I think that's a back and forth. They could have gone either way. I was shocked that the challenge actually worked out though. But Zach Zarba is the Celtics
fan so did you see the stats on that today?
Oh, look, JBC, he said, see, he would have been ready. 3-point percentage, 93%. It's fire. No, I didn't see what about Zarba. I'm sure it's not good at all.
It's not good for Celtics fans. It's just like this has been the same thing for years, and it's like the Scott Foster with Chris Paul kind of, you know. And same thing, I for those who are maybe just tuning in now, if you're watching live, I said a few minutes ago that the Celtics can't blame the refs. I have no feelings about the refs at the end of the game, because they shouldn't even have been in that position. They were up 20 in the fourth. But Zach Zarba versus the Celtics this year. Celtics at Pacers, 5 missed calls favoring the Pacers in the last 2 seconds. Celtics versus Lakers, 26-7 free throw variation for the Lakers, who won by 9. Celtics at Cavs last night, obviously overturns a foul with 0.7 seconds left on the clock, leading to a Cavs win. So it does seem like Zarba has something out for the C's this year, but I was surprised too, just like as an NBA fan, not really watching as a Celtics fan, having this thought. But the fact that that call gets overturned at that point of the game when there was contact nonetheless, right? So the two players collided when Tatum was shooting the ball. That happened. The call was that Tatum initiated the contact, therefore it wasn't a foul on Garland.
Yeah.
Again, I'm cool with the ruling. I was a little bit surprised just because usually it's kind of like that the football rule, like not enough evidence to overturn, right? Like usually the broadcast will say something along those lines, like, it's close, but if they called that on the floor, they'll probably keep it a foul. That wasn't the case. I just hope the Celtics, you know, don't act like in years past and we see another one of these next week where they're up by 20, mm-hmm. blow a game again. And you know, I don't think this will happen in the playoffs. I really don't. I think the group is that much different. I think they have so many more guys that they can go to down the stretch if they need to. I think it was a weird game. I think it's kind of inexcusable, but you got to put it behind you now. You got to appreciate the 11 game win streak that you just had. You're still the best team in the NBA. And you got to go into Denver with the attitude that you had against Golden State on Sunday. And you got to have that fuck you attitude. You just got to get up. You got to get up and you got to play with intensity against this group because they beat you at home. They ended our win streak earlier in the year. They're, you know, playing at full throttle right now. Murray's back. They got all their guys. And you got to go perform on Thursday night in Denver. But just to keep it on this game a little bit longer, we talked about Mitchell. Mitchell didn't play, and then Mobley got hurt during the game. Mitchell, you know, he said he'll miss three games. Now it's two after the Celtics game last night. I know we were texting on the side. You thought it's probably going to be a little bit longer than that for Mitchell. Now Mobley's sidelined for at least a few weeks with a sprained ankle. I mean, we're obviously the Cavs are good enough to compete. Do you see them holding that spot where they're at in the East, or do you think they slipped down the standings with these injuries?
Well, the Mitchell injury is more concerning because when you get a PRP injection, like in years past, you see that, like, it's not something that's going to go away, right? Like, that's not an injury that's going to heal by the end of the year. He's going to deal with it. The PRP is going to help with the swelling and get him back sooner. But the fact that they had him do this in the beginning of March means that he's missed some games with a knee already this year. It's not going to be something that goes away. That's what worries me most about the Mitchell thing. He might come back after these two games and play. I don't think it'll be the last two games that he misses. I think that it's they have to say these three games because you have to be out a week after the injection. Whether they let him sit other games or not remains to be seen. They do play they play tonight in Atlanta. So that's one of the games, obviously. The Mobley thing, I mean, Mobley it's just been a weird year for Evan Mobley, and he really, like, he does not fit next to Jared Allen. The ankle sprain is really unfortunate timing because this team has just not been able to play together, really. like that's the thing about these four guys is if you look at it going back to the start of last year, Darius Garland gets stabbed in his eyeball on opening night against the Raptors and starts missing time. And I don't know. I would love to see it. I don't know what the exact stat is, but it can't be more than 50% of the games that all four of these guys have played together since Mitchell got to the team. Like, it doesn't feel like it has been, at least. And that's
what really Jared Allen had the fractured hand last year too.
Yep. Allen got hurt last year. And then this year, everybody's been hurt at some point. Yep. All of them have had a different stint with an injury now, especially with Mobley going out. So it's just tough that, like, you haven't seen what this core can actually be. And we're coming up to a really important offseason with Donovan Mitchell. An extension is going to be on the table for him, and we're going to know a lot after that. But for right now, for what this team, Mobley and Allen just don't play well together. Like, anybody who's trying to convince themselves that they do is just not – A, does not paying attention to modern basketball, and B, just isn't watching the Cavs and is just looking at the names on the paper and seeing, you know, who these two guys are supposed to be. They really don't mesh well together. They don't fit each other's strengths. Mobley doesn't have an outside shot enough. He's great defensively. They work well together because it's just hard to score inside on them, and Mobley can be so mobile and get out to the outside and cover the perimeter a little bit. But offensively, they really just don't work together. And so I really want to see if Mitchell can come back after these two games and Mobley's out for an extended time, what it looks like with him and Garland and Allen as your just three core pieces. And then Mobley, you know, he was the guy who had the most hype, the highest hopes out of all this group. You were like Mitchell, obviously we knew what he was, but it was always like, damn, like what could Mobley be? He might be the guy that has to fit in and find a role and become more of a role player for this playoff run if the Cavs, you know, want to try to have some success in the playoffs. That might be what it comes down to, because I'm really wary of, like I said, I like the matchup. They clearly match up well with the Celtics and the Bucks. Like, they've had success against these two teams. Those are two teams who spread the ball out. Those aren't two, like, physical, like, dominating teams. Like, they're trying to spread you out offensively. And the Cavs do a good job staying in those games, playing good defense, and being able to be physical offensively. Then you see a game like a Knicks on Sunday where they get, you know, steamrolled by a Knicks team who has four or five starters out, and Josh Hart gets 19 rebounds. They can't out-physical the physical teams. So it really just depends on the Cavs matchup. And that's a big thing with Mobley and Allen. So I don't know. We'll see what Mobley looks like when he comes back, but it might be a blessing in disguise for the Cavs. Obviously, I don't want Mobley to be hurt. Don't want anybody to ever be hurt. But team construction wise, I'm interested to see how it looks without him.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Yeah, the Mobley thing's weird, man. Like, we were talking about it this before we hopped on too. Like, spraining your ankle on your other ankle is a crazy thing to have happen. Just super unfortunate. Yeah. But that's kind of Mobley, right? It's like, he's a little clumsy, and he kind of has been since he came in.
Yep.
You hate to see it, but it's the reality. Cavs holding the 3 seed right now. Bucks are a half game in front of you guys. And then, you know, you guys got a 4.5 game lead on the Magic, who are all of a sudden the 4 seed in the Eastern Conference. Crazy. So, you know, I think you guys will probably be good. It is just all dependent on Mitchell and this injury and the injections. And that second update is going to be huge because, yeah, I think you guys can probably coast and get away with not having Mobley. But I think it will come a time when you'll start to feel that Mitchell isn't there for this Cavs group. But
for sure.
Super impressive last night. Hopefully the Celtics can put it behind them. And yeah, huge game Thursday night. Excited for that. The rest of the news and notes, we mentioned Mitchell, we mentioned Mobley, Devin Booker and his ankle injury. Everything I keep hearing about this that is downplayed, like 7 to 10 days was the report from Shams on Monday. They're 31-19 when he plays. So obviously a much better record when he plays than when he doesn't. So, you know, I think the Suns can't really afford to have Book miss too much time. So hopefully for the Suns and Suns fans that this is a speedy one. They're 6th in the Western Conference standings right now, a game behind the Pelicans who are at 5. So D Book, hopefully he'll be back soon. Wiggins, a guy, is coming back. He's come back for the Warriors. That personal matter did not last nearly as long as the last time he was out for a personal matter. So he'll be back in the lineup for the Golden State Warriors. Russell Westbrook unfortunately fractured his hand for the Clippers. They'll be without Westbrook for a while. He is hopeful to return before the playoffs. So maybe we'll see Brody before the start of the playoffs for the Clippers. And then the only other news we had is that Kelly Olynyk signs a 2-year, $26 million extension with the Raptors.
It's crazy. Kind of, Canada's son. That's why I said when he got traded, yeah. They brought a hometown kid home. He wants to stay there. Hey, whatever.
Works. Yeah, maybe does that. I don't know. Maybe that means they're trying to just keep all the Canadian guys there. They went out and got RJ too. That's Kelly nice. Signs an extension. Yeah. So yeah, that's cool for the Raptors. Kelly.
The Booker Kelly's thing is. Sorry to cut you off there. The only one I wanted to comment on really was the Booker thing. It's just a shame that this team has another set of injuries to one of these stars, because that's like they've turned it around and now we're going to have, even if it's only a 2-week stretch, like the West is a war zone right now. Like you said, they're right there in the thick of it in that 4 to 5 to 6 range. Also, we've not talked enough about the Pelicans this season at all, yeah. Really. The fact that they're the 5 seed, I don't know how – we're going to talk about the West a little bit later. I'm interested to see where you land on the Pelicans, but with the Booker thing, it's just those three guys have not been able to be on the court as much as you wanted to see them on the court, and that's just been, I guess, KD's history with these super teams, that you don't get to see him enough together on the court. But yeah, Olynyk thing, that's hilarious that they're just, I hope they just bring all the Canadians. Wiggins needs to go back. They need to trade for him. If they could somehow get a super trade for Shea, like get him in there, or Jamal Murray, whichever one they can pull, like it'd be great.
Yeah, that'd be sick. Yeah, that is a good point. We should spend some time on the Pelicans when we get to the West, and we'll do that in just a bit when. Right after we talk about LeBron James scoring 40,000, because people probably thought we were skipping over that because it wasn't in the news, but we gave LeBron his own subsection here. LeBron scores 40K. Where were you moment? It's awesome, man. I mean, it's inevitable at this point, right? Once he broke Kareem's record, we knew he was going to reach this point, and no signs of slowing down. 21st season, age 39, LeBron still doing it. And the question that everyone loves to ask, everyone's been talking about on every other sports show, will anyone catch the king, Jake? What do you think?
I don't think so. I mean, it'd be so like 20, the longevity and the fact that like this has never been done before. It's like Wayne Gretzky's stats at this point. Like no one in hockey is catching up to Wayne Gretzky's point totals or anything like that because it's so absurd. What LeBron is doing is just beyond absurd, and it has been for a long time. And 40K is just a number. Like, you know, you saw when we were growing up, you see Kareem's number up there and be like, man, who the hell is going to even get close to that? Mm-hmm. And now you see like 40, like I don't even know who you would think could possibly do it. Like, would Luka be the guy who might be able to do it right now just because of the volume of scoring he has? Maybe he's the closest one. And the scoring is up, so maybe it is more likely. But you also have to play – like, I don't think Luka's playing 21 years. Luka's probably going to play, like, 12 years and then go just hang out on a beach somewhere. Like, that's the type of thing I see. Like, it's a lot of – the 21 years part of this and the fact that he's averaged, you know, 27 every single year – there's not a lot of guys that you're going to look at and be like, I think that guy can pull that off for that long. So I'm going to just say no. It's crazy to me. I never thought when I was 27 years old that I'd still be talking about LeBron James as an active and effective basketball player. If you would have asked me when I was younger growing up as a LeBron fan, this is like beyond wildest imaginations at this point. So yeah, no, I don't think anybody's catching up to that. But there is like Luka's a guy you could see do that. Who knows what Wemby ends up turning into in the long term? He might be the other one. Just depends if he could play like 18 years or something, like, or something along the lines of what Kareem got to, he might be able to pull off and get close to it. But that's about it.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you, man. Like, I think maybe they're in the league right now, and it would have to be Wemby or Luka if they will get broken. And I think when I first started thinking this, I just said to myself the cliche, like, records are meant to be broken.
Yeah.
And so, like, at first I was like, yeah, like, eventually someone will. But, like, I don't know, man. I don't know if anyone will catch this because just the combination of his drive and, like, what he's been chasing his whole career is to be the best. He is the chosen one, or he was the chosen one. He still is the chosen one. He has a different motor than everyone else. And something else I was thinking about when I was trying to, you know, decipher if I really did think someone could beat this or not was the way that the league has changed every year since LeBron has been in the league. It's just the scoring has just gone up and up and up and up since 2003. And really, you know, for a small, or not even a small time, for a long time before that, that wasn't the case for the NBA. It was a lot of defense. It was a lot of grit and grind. It was a lot of, you had to earn your points. It was a lot more physical game. And, you know, this isn't a knock on LeBron by any means. It's the way it happened. But when he came in 2003 to now, it's just been scoring up and up and up, and everyone can score. And the games are, you know, 150 to 145 now. And that's a regular thing. And so that's, you know, a big boost for LeBron that helped him out to get to this point. And I think if we ever see the league go in the other direction, I think there's no chance that anyone catches this just for that simple matter. And like, you're going to have to at least play 20 seasons if you want to even sniff this record. So who else is, like, we compare LeBron not just to basketball players with the longevity, but in all sports. Like, this guy is a freak athlete who gets you know, tremendous praise from other freak athletes across all professional sports. And everyone's like, no one does it like LeBron. Like, how does he do it? How does he keep his body in such great shape? How is he still dominating the NBA at age 39?
Yeah.
It's questions that can't be answered, and it might be a record that will never be broken.
The most seasons played is if LeBron doesn't retire after this year, he's going to tie Vince Carter for 22 seasons. And that's the most seasons anybody's played in their career.
Yeah.
We and got what, Robert.
Vince probably averaged like 4.5 points that last year.
Too, yeah, exactly. Robert Parrish played 21 seasons. Kareem played 20. So that's what, like, Kareem, 20 seasons. Like, you have to get up to that number. Kevin Garnett played 21 seasons. Kobe played 20 seasons. Like, it's a very rare. Dirk played, let's see, what does it say Dirk played? He played 21 seasons. So, like, that's, like, you have to be elite, elite talent, elite physical, like, athlete. These are guys, all those guys that we just mentioned are all crazy athletes with incredible longevity, obviously. And you got to be awesome at basketball and late into your career, too. Like, it's a tough recipe.
Yeah, man. I just don't think anyone will do it. It's hard to even conceptualize. So I'm just going with no. I think we let LeBron have his moment. And that's the thing. Like, he's not done. He's 40,000 isn't the mark to hit. It's going to be more than that. We know he's going to keep scoring to end this season. He's almost definitely going to play next year at age 40, just to probably say that he played at age 40. And then, you know, who knows after that? And Bronny, I'm sure, has a lot to do with where his career goes once he comes into the league. So the 40,000 mark isn't even the mark that you need to get to if you're a guy chasing this record. So I will say good luck to everyone who thinks that they can or is even just attempting to do so. I guess we can start with the Lakers, because we're gonna jump into the wild west here, because it's just incredible. Like, I feel like they're at the beginning of the season, it was like all these teams, we wouldn't be surprised if they won the West. Then all of a sudden the Timberwolves have just been consistently so damn good and holding that one spot for much longer than I thought they were going to. The Thunder are a half game back, the Nuggets are just one game back from the one spot. Then you have the Clippers at the four seed. They're only three games back. You mentioned the Pelicans have been playing great basketball. We haven't even really given them that much love. Then you have teams like the Lakers and the Warriors who are in the play-in. Steve's Mavs are in the eight seed. It's so crazy, man. I it's hard to even understand what happens in the Western Conference on a nightly basis. Who do you want to start with? Should we just start with the Lakers? I want to ask you this question, actually, because they've been playing well lately. Let's see. They're 7-3 in their last 10. But it's so confusing to me, right? Because the Clippers win when LeBron had 19 in the fourth quarter. I was like, oh, my God, this is amazing. Like, the Lakers and LeBron just did this. They beat the Clippers, who, you know, Clippers have been great this year. And then I think the very next night, they had to go to overtime to beat the Wizards. And yep. I think Davis had to have like 40-something points in that game. And it's like, okay, well, that's impressive that you won these two games back-to-back. But at the same time, it's like you did have to go to overtime to beat the Wizards. I just feel like there's a lot of that this year with the Lakers, where it's like they do something very impressive. And then all of a sudden we're in this spot where, like, was that win really that impressive for the Lakers?
It's why, like, just the West in general, like the fact that this team is 34-29 and the nine seed. And if you go over to the East, the Bulls are the nine seed at 29-32. Like, it's just a complete flip of their record. It just shows the strength of this conference. I don't trust this Lakers team, but do you want to, like, if Minnesota has to play the Lakers in round one, that those fans are going to be terrified all series. They got LeBron coming out of the building game one, fans are hyped up, and you have to deal with that. So the thing about this West is it feels like you can make a case for all the teams in a play-in or playoff position, like even down to the Warriors at the 10 seed. You can make a case that the Warriors can make a run if they make it into the dance and they get into the right matchup and everything else. So when it comes to the Lakers, it's I think that they can win a couple series and get to the West Finals. I do, but I'm more expecting them to be that inconsistent team. If they come into the wrong matchup, it's really going to be matchup dependent in the Western Conference. This Lakers team, though, it's just LeBron and AD are just so fucking good. Like, that's really all it is. Like, the team around them is not great, but AD has been, you know, on another, he's been outstanding this year. Like, he's going to be an all-NBA talent. I think if you go to Basketball References MVP poll or MVP chart that they have, he's like 9th or 10th in it. Like, that's the kind of year he's having. And then LeBron, he's averaging 25 points at you know, 39 years old. He's averaging 52% from the field. He's averaging almost 40%. He might still be at 40% from three. Like, that's all you want from how, what more could you ask for him? So they're just playing at such a high level, those two players, but they have to be playing at a high level every night for them to go. Let's go into the Mavs because our co-host has chimed in. And this is his thoughts on the Mavs. Limited visiting hours and no hot meals. No hot meals. He just wants, I don't even know what that means. What you get, like some cereal, some gross sandwiches for Jason Kidd. Because that's the thing is, like, the Warriors, we know how deadly they can be. I don't think we spend a ton of time on Steph and like what he can be able to do. I don't know if they can make a run this year, just how inconsistent. The Mavs, I feel like, have the highest variance out of all these teams. Like, from night to night, the Mavs, it's
crazy, bro.
One saltine cracker a day. That's now you're getting, that's getting worse and worse for Jason Kidd.
This is torture. This is in jail.
The Mavs have the highest variance, don't they? Like, you could see the Mavs doing anything from night to night. I don't know what to make of this team.
It's really hard, man. Like, sometimes they seem unstoppable. And yeah, I mean, Steve, this is something he's been saying forever. He's commenting because he's not here tonight. Play Gafford over Kleba. And it seems weird. Like, last night I was watching the Mavs Pacers, and I see Gafford playing unbelievable in the minutes he's getting. But it seems like Jason Kidd is just not playing Gafford a lot. And I don't think that's the whole problem, but it does seem like as is inconsistent as their play is, it's kind of like the same thing with the lineups. And yep. I do think they got better at the trade deadline, but if you can't put out the correct lineups or the lineups that are going to work best for you, then it doesn't really matter if you got better and made those moves, because they've kind of been playing worse since then. They're 5-5 in their last 10. They're on a 3-game losing streak. And I know we talked about it last episode, but they're in a gauntlet. That road trip was brutal. They had to play some really good teams. I think the Philadelphia loss on Sunday was kind of inexcusable. I don't think you should lose that when Philly's missing some starters, but I don't know. Looking at the Mavs as an 8 seed just doesn't seem right, especially with the season Luka's having. But I don't know. Is that part of it? Like, is there not enough other guys involved? Like, I know he gets his teammates involved. Like, he leads the league in assists, I believe, but I don't know. What do you think? What is the issue here, other than, you know, their defense isn't all that great, but you would think that Luka's offensive firepower and the season that Kyrie's having quietly, it's just weird to see them at that 8 seed for me. It's almost like it's hard. I watch a good amount of their games. It's kind of hard for me to figure out.
Yeah, it feels like they should have enough scoring. Like, we're talking about the Lakers. They just have two stars that can carry them, and that's why they're inconsistent. It feels like the same thing with the Mavs. Like, Kyrie and Luka are two incredible talents that can win you most of your games, but it's not going to be able to do it every single night consistently, like some of the better teams. They rely on guys that, like, Dante Exum is a guy who has a huge role on this team, and he's been good in his role. Would he be a guy that you would want, like, on your Celtics team? No. Not really.
Because because in the Celtics game, I understood why he was out of the league for so many years.
Yeah, exactly.
There was some bad, like, oh my God, this dude isn't an NBA player moments when he was in the game.
Yeah, well, the 3-point percentage for other teams has been crazy recently, to Steve's point. The defense is a major part of the problem. The Kleber minutes don't make any sense. I don't know what Jason Kidd, like, he was playing Gafford and, you know, Gafford a bunch right when he got into there, and then it seems like something has happened where he doesn't I don't know what the deal is. I don't think any fans really understand what Maxi Kleber is getting all these minutes for still. So it's a weird thing. Maybe it's a Luka thing as much as anything else. Like, who knows who's deciding that and who's wanting that on the floor, but it doesn't seem like it maximizes their talent and what they need defensively. And yeah, it might hurt you offensively to have Gafford and Lively as your two bigs on the floor. It might hurt you from the free throw line. Lively's only shooting 55%. I don't think Gafford has a good percentage this year either. But those are things that you don't have the luxury to pick against those things. Like, you are not – this isn't a super team. You can't – you're not going to be able to – I feel like the Mavs' problem is they want to be this malleable team now that they have all – they have more options, you know, because when they added Washington and added Gafford, like, they're – we talked about it. They're a fuller roster. They're a fuller lineup that can, like, kind of be more malleable. But I think they got to just play to their strengths more than anything else and just hope for the best. Like, you're not going to be in the best spot in every matchup and hope Luka makes up for that deficiency. So I think it is a lot of coaching. Exum, I'll be patient with. He just came back. Okay, that's fair. I just mean Dante Exum in general, though, Steve. Like, the fact that he's in this role. Now, he has been better in this role. But and Mavs have been settling for many bad looks, too. That is true. And Tim Hardaway is a big problem with that. He has not been good this year. He hasn't been as good as he's been in years past. He doesn't look as explosive as he used to be. So, yeah, that's my biggest thing with the Mavs. It's weird to see. It is weird to see them in that eight spot. But we talk about all these other teams, and we get to this other group in the West. Like, talk about the Kings. Let's shift to the Kings.
The Who Kings are they, bro?
That's what I don't know.
The Kings, dude.
Exactly.
They were the league's hotness last year. We thought they were going to be the next best thing. And it's like almost like they've had a major decline this year. How does that even happen? And Sabonis is playing great. So it doesn't really, like, is it the same thing? We're just talking about the Lakers and the Mavs. Like, is it De'Aaron Fox and Sabonis are great and then they're not really getting enough out of everyone else? But that wasn't the case last year. Like, Malik Monk, I feel like he's still playing pretty solid.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you know, Harrison Barnes at this point is a little stale to still be on the Kings. I think they probably need to move on from him. I think Davion Mitchell is a guy that maybe didn't really translate to the NBA as well as people would have hoped.
Yep.
But, or is, you know, maybe it's just the Western Conference is in general better this year. But it is weird that they're just the seventh seed, and it's like, well, we're not really hearing about the Kings on a nightly basis anymore. The beam. Light the beam took over the fucking NBA last year, bro. We haven't been lighting the beam at all.
No beam. No beam has been lit at all. No, it does.
Six.
It does feel – I think it's what you said. You mentioned it. It's as much the fact that the West is so much better this year and a couple teams passed them by. You know, like the Thunder and Wolves pass them by, the Pelicans pass them by. The Suns are obviously, you know, they're kind of confounding too. But I feel like those are the teams that have just kind of leaped with them. And I think that the Kings were close to those teams. You looked at that. Fox has not been, he has been inconsistent this year. That is for sure. Sabonis is like, I no longer can make the Fox is better than Sabonis argument because he has not been the player that he needs to be, and Sabonis is going to be an all NBA level talent. Monk should be the starter at shooting guard. It's Kevin Herter also has not been as good as he should be this year. Like, they've had guys drop off.
It's been a few games where Herter looks like he shouldn't be out there.
he really does have those tough moments. So I think it's as much the league. Like, they think of how close they were last year too. Like that Warriors series. Like, the Warriors were only a couple games. I feel like only. I'm going to look at last year's standings where they ended up, but I'm pretty sure the Kings were, like only four games ahead of the Warriors. They ended in the sixth seed. So it's not like they like separated a lot. And I feel like that's where they're going to end up, a 44-38 team rather than a 48-34 team this year. That's the margins that's happened in this conference though.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that probably is the most reasonable answer for a team like the Kings, where not much has changed except for the teams around them. Like, other teams around them got better. And then, you know, just the factor of not being the new hotness, maybe that lowered morale, or, you know, Fox being a little more inconsistent. I get that too. It's probably a combination of all these things, but it is bizarre to see a team like really come alive like that last year and then just like, Yeah, they're the Kings. I mean, they're not the Kings of what we used to know the Kings as, who were down at the bottom of the West every season. But, you know, they could easily be fighting in the play-in to have a shot at the playoffs. Yeah. So we'll see with the Kings. Let's talk about two teams closer, or, you know, we can lump the Nuggets in with this group too. The Timberwolves and the Thunder, though. So T-Wolves, like, Anthony Edwards showed up late to a game on Monday night, bro. Like,
yeah, I've never heard that.
What are we doing, man? He didn't start for the first time since his rookie year because he was late for a basketball. Like, he checked in, like, what, a minute into the game, or, like, even maybe even seconds into the game?
Yeah, I think it was, like, 30 seconds in. But, yeah, I, like, don't know what the hell
nevertheless,
was going on there.
Wasn't there for tip-off. Wondering how that happens with your superstar. And it's – I know it's such a little thing, and this is a tease, because this is kind of an old man take right here. This is a tease for the end of the episode, but it's such an old man take, but, like, I feel like you don't want to see that from your star, man. Like, this is a guy who his competitiveness and athleticism has gotten compared to Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
And, like, Kobe, Jordan, and, like, guys like LeBron and the guy you want Ant to be, like, those guys don't show up late to games. They don't miss tip off, bro. Mm-hmm.
Nope.
And I know it's a regular season game. I know they're still the one seed, but they're only a half game up on the Thunder. They had that weird shit earlier in the year where they're trying to get Karl Anthony Towns to get as many points as he could, and they end up losing the game. Mm-hmm. And you have Ant missing tip off. Like, it's just the T-Wolves are that good, I think. I think they're the one of the biggest threats to the Celtics, if I'm honest. And, you know, that's if the Celtics make it to the finals, and the T-Wolves do too. But just matchups-wise, like, they have the size, they have the length of the wings, they have wings that are just willing to defend. And then you have, you know, your own little superstar in Anthony Edwards, who can be a game wrecker. So I think they have the talent to be legit, but it's all these weird little things with the Timberwolves where I'm like, are they there? And then, you know, Karl Anthony Towns is Karl Anthony Towns too. Like, there's games where he can shoot, like, what, 3 from 7 from the field. And it's like that was a whole game for Towns. He only took 7 shots and, like, 4 rebounds. Like, that still happens with Karl Anthony Towns. So I think they're super talented, actually pretty well coached, but I think there's some weird things going on with the T-Wolves.
Yeah, I don't trust Gobert, and I don't trust Towns, and that's why this team does not feel like a good one seed. Like, you said it perfectly about everything there. And it's like, we've seen it, Gobert in the playoffs, how he gets played. We'll see if it changes this year, but I don't have reason to believe that teams won't be able to pull him out of the paint again and attack him the way that they did for the Jazz. And everything you said about Towns is exactly like what you should worry about. Like, that's supposed to be your second leading scorer, your second star. And I don't think you can trust him in a playoff position. So the Wolves might be the one seed now, but, like, all these other teams, I feel is a bigger threat in the West through 2 through 6, from the Thunder, the Nuggets, the Clippers, Pelicans, and the Suns. I want to touch on the Suns quick before we go to these other teams. So the Suns on Christmas Day lost to the Mavs and went to 14-15. Since then, they are 22-11. Beal came back from injury on the 29th in a win over the Hornets to go to 16-15. And those guys have mostly been healthy for that entire stretch, that 22-11 stretch, since they were really just battling injury on and off. They've had some games here where guys miss, and obviously we just touched on earlier in news and notes that Booker's going to be out for a little bit. But it feels like it's been a tale of two seasons for the Suns, where at the beginning it was like, they just can't get healthy, we haven't seen these guys together. And then once they finally got together, 22-11, like, you're taking that's if you keep that going, it's 44-22. Like, it's a 55 ish win team on the season, who would probably be, you know, in the top three in the West right now. And I think people seeing the Suns at the 6 is making them not think of them as a real contender, and just looking at the record and looking at their seeding and being like, like, that Suns team was disappointing this year so far. But really, they had a bunch of injuries to start the year. And when they've all been together on the floor, they've been one of the best and most consistent teams in the NBA. That's a scary team for me, wherever they end up there. And this is a good point from Steve about the Wolves. They need the one core. Yes, they do. They can't go to OKC or Denver And they also can't end up the 3 seed playing the Suns in the first round, or 2 seed and playing the Lakers or the Warriors. Like, they need to, like, and even if they are the 1 seed and playing the Lakers or the Warriors in that series, it's a tough thing for the Wolves. But the Suns are a team that I'm very bullish on going into the playoffs, depending on where they end up.
No, it's a good point. We definitely needed to talk about the Suns, and they went out and got exactly what they were looking for at the deadline too. And I think that goes unnoticed, but they went out and got Royce O'Neal, and he's been playing huge minutes for them. He's a wing who defends. He's another guy who can knock down the three. So they're kind of just doing everything right, basically, this second half of the season. And can I just say, we should be counting our lucky stars that the Suns aren't a higher seed, because that means we would have to throw Kevin Durant into this MVP conversation as well, because he's quietly averaging 28, nearly 7 rebounds and 5.5 assists on 52% shooting. So, like, imagine if the Suns were the 2 or the 1 seed in the Western Conference, like, it would be the same thing as Tatum, but a little better numbers, like, yep. Or I guess the rebounding's down, but otherwise pretty similar and better shooting percentage. So it's just funny. Like, I can't imagine if we would have had to throw KD into that conversation last week. What's Steve saying here? Actually crazy that one could face LeBron, Luka, or Curry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is nuts. And this is Nunez. I was OKC reminds me when they had the big three, but this young group is different, especially the way Chet's playing another year. Yeah, the Chet thing is with it, okay, but you made a lot of great points about the Suns and KD's, like, it's crazy that KD's still doing that. Like, we were talking about LeBron earlier in this. KD, the fact that he is still at this age and scoring the way he is nuts.
I feel like people probably think he's having a bad year too, because they're the 60. They don't really get the coverage that some of these other teams are getting. And it's like, nope, he's averaging 28, 6, and 5 on 52% shooting.
Really high on the Suns. OKC is the best team in this conference. I think that's fair to say. I do think the Nuggets are the biggest threat to the Celtics when we get to the playoffs, but this is why. Like, Shea has been, much to Steve's chagrin, has been an MVP candidate all year long. But Chet, being who he is, stepping in, has been incredible. And then that roster around them that they have is so deep. It's not proven, guys. They're the second youngest team in the league, OKC. But they have the exact roster build and guys that you would want to see on a title team. It just depends how those guys play in the playoffs. And even if they ended up playing the Celtics in a final series, that would be the narrative. It's like, okay, how are these guys going to perform against a bunch of guys who have been there before? Like, it's a lot of unknowns when it comes to the OKC team.
My biggest thing with them is, like, I think they're incredible. I see the comparison to the old big three at the Thunder. I see the liveliness. I see how good they are. I think SGA is a legit number one. I think Chet has been incredible. I think they do lack size, though. I think they're have the capability to beat a Timberwolves or a Nuggets in a series. Yeah, I do. I think they could, but I think it could get to be a lot for Williams and Chet when they get to the playoffs and actually have to deal with a Joker or a Gobert and a Cap for a 7-game series.
Well, that's a great question that Steve proposed to you that we can touch on Denver, because Denver is a pretty known quantity for us, right? Like, we kind of know what to expect. So you take an OKC over Denver in a 7-game series, because I might.
I can't. Not right now, man. I think the way Joker's been playing, I think just what we know Joker is, how just well-oiled of a machine the Denver Nuggets are too, and just how many different ways they can beat you and how easy they can make it look to beat you in all those different ways. I just don't think – I don't think Chet could check – Jokic for a series, and I think if you let him get going, and even if you want to throw all the guys in the world at him, he has enough good players around him where he can beat you with his playmaking. So I don't think it would be a sweep by the Nuggets. I don't think it would even be 5 games, but I don't know. I can't see it right now. What do you think about that? Am I wrong? Do you think OKC is fine with the size that they have?
No, I agree with you. I mean, Listen, I was going to war the other day for the Nuggets in our group chat, so I can't turn back on that now. I think that they're still the best team in this Western Conference. They're still my biggest threat to Boston or anybody else coming out of the East. it's Jokic. It's once Jokic gets to the playoffs, Jokic is like he's becoming like to me the most one of, if not the most deadly playoff performers. Like he's gonna perform. He's gonna put up a game where he puts up 40, 15, and 12. Or three games in a row like that. Like, I don't know. There's not a lot of teams. That's the thing with OKC is we haven't seen them do that consistently game in and game out. I've seen Jokic go on those runs and be able to do that in the playoffs, obviously on the way to a title. So I still got full faith in the Nuggets. Like, touching on them, they're still my – like, the Thunder, I think, are the one seed. And I think that they're the best team overall, but I can't pick them in a series over the Nuggets. The Clippers, we got two teams to get through here. Let's end on a high note with the Pelicans because I want to hype up the Pelicans a little bit. The Clippers, since everybody started getting real hot on the Clippers and being like, oh, is this a title contender, everything else, they're 5-5 in their last 10, 5-6 in their last 11. This is a team that looks like they're slowing down a bit. They've got James Harden and Paul George on their roster. Like, is this a team that if you put them up, like right now they're in a 4-5 series with the Pelicans. Are you picking the Clippers over the Pelicans? Because the Pelicans have not been talked about enough on a national scale at all. This is a team who was very impressive last year and has gotten better this year. They're the 5 seed. They're only 6 games out of the 1 seed, 37-25 right now. They're about 7-3 in their last 10. Ingram's been awesome. Zion, for all the hate that he gets, has still been a really effective player all year. Like, how do you feel about the Pelicans, and how would you feel about them in a matchup with the Clippers in the first round, if that's how it goes?
I think I would give the edge to the Clippers, but I do think that the Pelicans are both underrated and just from my standpoint, underwatched. Like, I don't think I've given the Pelicans enough respect and watched enough Pelicans games this year. But they kind of remind me of the Knicks of the Western Conference, but with like a little more flash. Like, yeah. I think they're very solid. I think they have a few guys who are like borderline stars, right? Like in Zion and Ingram. And then they just have really solid guys around them. They like to play physical, but I think the difference between the Knicks and the Pelicans, like I think the Pelicans are able to be flashy and are able to just kind of play with a little more mojo to them. And I think that's what they've been doing lately. I mean, up and down the roster, they're just solid. They have guys that can defend. They have guys that can shoot. They have, you know, guys who just make game winning plays. And for the Pelicans, it's kind of the same as it's always been in recent years. It comes down to Ingram and Zion and what they want to do in the playoffs and what Zion looks like in the playoffs.
Yeah, this is – and he's leading their team in scoring. He's got 22 points a game. This is great. He's looked amazing as of late. What is he going to look like in the playoffs? They need a star to take over. I think Ingram can be that star. I think he has takeover ability in these games. I think McCollum also does in certain spots. It's crazy to think though, like they've kind of went under the radar. They're kind of just solid all the way through. They don't really have like Ingram or Zion hasn't really separated themselves from each other. They've been a really good duo. This is a good point about the Clips. No one started to drift. Yeah. Like it's, that's what I'm scared about in the playoffs though, is when James Harden, not even drifting away from the game plan, just drifting away from the game in general and kind of just floating out there. And what does that team do when he gets like that? What does Ty Lue do when Harden gets like that? But when it comes to the Pelicans, man, it seems like they're right there where if Ingram can take like another mini step, like Zion's shooting 57% from the field this year. That's crazy, bro. On 20 for 22 points and he's taking 15 shots a game. Like that's nuts. He's shooting 15 shots a game. Ingram's shooting 16 and McCollum's at 14.8. So basically 15, like they're very balanced in their offense. That's why you don't see one of them really popping off. Like it's a very balanced three-headed monster of them. And I think the team's just, I'm very interested to see what they look like in that first round. If it's with the Clippers, that's a really interesting first round series. And then to see who they match up with that one seed, or if it's an 8 seed, like the Pelicans could make some noise if they catch the right teams, and they've beaten pretty much everybody at least once or been in a game with everybody. Like it feels like the Pelicans in all these games are in their games too, so really interesting to see what they do.
I feel like unless they go up against Denver or OKC, it should be interesting. I think anyone else in the West, they could give a fight.
Yeah.
I think I could see OKC run them out of the gym, and then I just don't think that they're ready for Denver. But I don't think a lot of teams in the West are ready for Denver. But yeah, this is that just goes to show you how crazy the Western Conference is, man. Like the Clippers, it's so hard because they do look so good, and there's a lot of players that I like on that team. But like you said it, man, like Harden and Paul George, two guys who notoriously, you know, I don't want to say haven't showed up completely in the playoffs, but have just had lapses in the playoffs where they kind of go to sleep or just hurt their team more than they help their team. And I think that's Harden more than PG. I think yeah. PG is inconsistent, but like Harden last year on Philly was bad, man. That there was some serious collapses there. They have the injury to Westbrook. Well, you know, we'll see. Hope, like I mentioned at the top, they're hopeful that he returns before the playoffs, but the Clippers just have a good squad, man. And they have a guy like Kawhi Leonard that if they can keep him healthy through the playoffs, we've seen what he can do in the big moments. So that is the wild, wild West.
Yes, sir.
And we just broke down the whole, or at least the competitive teams in the Western Conference. It's going to be a crazy tight race to the end. We'll see. It's crazy that like 1, 2, and 3 are Timberwolves, Thunder, and Nuggets. And that's so interesting, everything that's going on there. And then you have the Lakers, Warriors, and Mavs the Mavs, Lakers, Warriors, I should say, at 8, 9, 10. And it's just as exciting at the bottom of the conference. So that's how you know we have good basketball this year. That's how you know the West is that competitive. We have one more thing. I told you guys we're going to have a new segment starting next week, and I'm going to do it this week. It's called Donnie's Old Man Take of the Week. I realize that I'm only 26, but sometimes when I'm watching these NBA games, I feel like an old man when I have these thoughts that pop into my head. So let's do it. My first old man take on Happy Hour Hoops,
I'm
and
ready.
One that just got me the other night, is I think it's stupid, and I think they should do away with taking away or adding a point if a shot's a three-pointer or not, and they change it like later on in the game when they go back and look. I think that should be on the ref, and you deal with what he calls in the moment. If he puts his hands up, it's a three. I don't want you going back and looking and changing it to a two and then taking a point off, and then there's like a 45-second delay till the broadcast tells us that, oh, that point that you just saw got taken off the scoreboard is because the referees thought, you know, saw that that Porzingis shot was a two instead of a three. So that's why the point got taken off. I don't know. It's weird. I get it. They're trying to be accurate, but something about it, I'm like, I just want what happens live in the game to be the call.
No, I love
it. It might be lame, but
I love this take. I think we need to let more things go. Like,
yes, we have too much of the stoppage and like, let's review this. There's too much.
Even last night, the Cavs would have lost if that foul doesn't get changed and they're not allowed to challenge it. And challenges, that's a whole other story. We can get into that. But you're at this exciting end of a game where Tatum takes this shot and he's about to go to the line. It's like, actually, we're going to go to the monitor for 4 minutes and look at this every single angle. It's like you're ruined. Like it, you take it out. Like you take out like the excitement of the end of a game. He said, yeah, look at this. He said, I'm 35 and had to many times come back and the score change at timeout and commercial break. Yeah. It's stupid, Dunny. This is a great take by you. If the ref messes it up, you messed it up. Like that's what it should be. That's for fans to argue about after the game, the refs missing the call. You don't need to change it during the game.
That's what I'm saying. Like, right. It you know, as maybe exhausting as the conversation ended up getting, but like remember the rebound by Bosch and kicks it out to Allen and he hits the three. Like the discourse about his heel being out of bounds. Okay, well, was his toe on the 3-point line? It's like that call needs to be made in that instance, because if it did get changed by the ref, like that it would be even more chaos than it already was. All the arguing after that.
Imagine after right after that they list instead of like celebration, they're like, "We're actually gonna take you to the monitor for 7 minutes."
Zach Sarver throws up his hands.
Yeah, it's crazy, bro. I'm so against in all sports. My dad's favorite thing is replay is supposed to be for fans. That's what it's supposed to be. Like, that's what you have the refs on the field for. If they miss it and it's a call that goes wrong, like, that just should be a part of the game. That should be a part of the human error. Exactly. Don't ruin the flow of games. Like, games are – there has been a little bit where you, like, have all these stoppages and have all these reviews and everything, and you go to change things. You're like, what do you mean? Like,
and, like, I guess – my thing, like, it doesn't even necessarily stop the game. Like, they usually keep going. But, like, just the fact that you have to take points off the board or add points, and then the broadcast has to explain it to the listeners. It's just – it seems – and, like, especially a game in basketball where you score so many points throughout the game. So, I know every point matters, like, logistically. But, I mean, if this happens in the second quarter and then you have a 30-point win by the team, it doesn't matter.
Yep.
And – even, you know, one step further, the point differential between a 2 and a 3, the same thing goes is when, like, a player steps out of bounds and the ref misses it, and then they take points away. It's like, wait a minute, bro, you didn't get that right. You don't get a goal look while we're at a timeout break and everyone's watching commercials, and then we come back from the break and 3 points are gone because you missed the out of bounds call by inches. I don't know. It's an old man take for a reason. Apparently, our listeners think that the first one is a W. So I'll take that.
It's a dub. And this is a great point. There should just be one person in a skybox looking at this every time. And you should be able to just bring it down right away. Like, have a little headset and it's like, no, that wasn't a 3. And then you get the right call right away. Like, we don't need to go change it. It changes the trajectory of things. I'm with it, Dunny. It's a good one.
All right. Hell yeah. Well, there will be another old man take next week. Thank you guys all for listening. Shout out to our great sponsor, WinStreaks. It's simple. You pick teams to win games, you accumulate points, and then you're able to win cash prizes depending on how well you did. 5 picks every day on NBA, NFL, NHL, college basketball. Baseball is right around the corner. That's going to be awesome for WinStreaks. 100 players win cash prizes every week up to $2,000. Contest runs from Monday to Sunday. Again, no deposits ever. 100% free to play. Use our code HHH when you download the WinStreaks app in the referral code section. That's HHH. Go download the WinStreaks app, guys. Shout out to Trainwreck Sports. This has been another episode of Happy Hour Hoops. Later, guys.
Peace. Love you.